listen to this now, the first part. Traditional song, traditional dancing. You have two kinds of dances. One is a fancy, which evolved from the tradition. The one in the red is the traditional dress, and the other is fancy shawl, which broke away from the traditional years ago when the young ladies thought, you know, this is too boring to dance like my mom, so I'm gonna do a little fancy stuff here. So that caught on with the younger folks, and it has thrived. In fact, it's become a category in the powwow dancing, and there's hundreds of little ladies that dance the fancy shawl today. So because they're liberated sort of from the traditional cloth and straight dancing, which is a serious dance, and so what you saw there is just that two categories.
There used to be powwows at Glenwood Springs High School back in the early 90s, youth powwows. Do you know what happened with that?
Yeah, it's powwows, yeah, I do, wasn't very good, but let me talk a little bit about powwows. Powwows today, when the powwows used to be held on reservations exclusively, because it was Native American celebration, communities started picking it up for their own purposes, mostly for finance. So today there are reservation powwows, which is put on by the tribes, and it's free to you because they're paying all the bills. So they make it so that they want you to know that they're still indulging in their traditional ways. So it's free to you. If you have know of any powwows on your reservation, you're free to go. And they would want you to go so that they can exhibit their dancing, and you'll know that they still do things. And then there are city powwows. City powwows are taken on by city folks, leadership of cities, and financed by the cities. And theirs are contest powwows, and they put out hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars to attract Native American dancers to compete with one another, like these two ladies would compete with any number of ladies that show up, and they have judges of the crowd, Native Americans, to judge them. And so it's a contest thing. And Glenwood Springs put one on, a city powwow, organized by the city and financed by the city, and they had it at the local high school. Well, they got crossways with some Native American tribes, and the tribes refused to attend anymore, and they put kind of a blemish on it, and so it was a failed. And a lot of them do happen that way. The ones that survive have a Native American, at least one, as an advisor, and then they that goes more smoothly. The larger powwows have started from nonprofit groups. The largest powwow in Colorado is the Denver March Powwow, and it features like 700 dancers. And the largest of all powwows in Albuquerque, Gathering of Nations, and they number 7,000 dancers. And there's any number of dancers. And my group, which is called the Native American, Cultural Native American, is scheduling one for August the 27th in Grand Junction. I have been part of powwows, the Delta Powwow. I was a member of the planning group for like 7 or 8 years. I put my own powwow in Montrose for 4 years, which was successful. And now we're doing one in Grand Junction a year from this last August. This next month, I'm putting together an Indian Market Day in Grand Junction. And so we're going to attract all Native Americans with their native crafts to Grand Junction on the 17th of November. And November is a Native American month. So I don't know the intricate details of how that went down, but I know they had some conflicts, as did Meeker and other places that that have tried to have powwows. But if you had one here, it would be a core group, and they stay together and don't reach out and try to enlist other people from reservations or other reservations with different ideas, and you can have a successful powwow here. This would be great right here. So any other questions?
Roland? We'll
turn this into a
Roland? Question. We all know that Indigenous Peoples Day is replacing Columbus Day, first of all, to honor the Indigenous people who we owe such a great debt of gratitude to, and also because we now realize that Columbus did not discover America. He was about 7,000 years too late, and also it's come to light that Columbus and his crew did some horrible things to the first Native Americans they encountered. I wonder if you'd agree that it's not fair to single out Columbus for his racism, since at that time the white tribe was all racist. They thought that all people of color were less than human, and they could do whatever they wanted to them. Robert E. Lee, Andrew Jackson, all these people were just following what the rest of the tribe did in their racist acts. Do you agree with that?
I agree, and that, we're here, and I hope your patience. I'm going to have to capitalize a little bit on what he's saying, and I won't take long. I'll be really brief, but this hits squarely on what my career ended up as, and I agree with you, sir. Okay, but I was a tribal leader for 9 years. I was a chairman of my tribe, but I decided at the same time that I needed to do something different, and that I was on kind of a roll. And so I put in for a job at the Smithsonian Institute in Washington. And I'm just a reservation kid. I was told that. And so, but I had to be nominated by my tribe to be considered. So I asked my tribe, the council, if they would nominate me. And they that's what they said. What, you? What? Who are you? I don't know why you're doing this. And so I said, because I want to. But I talked them into nominating me, and they did. And 4 months later, the Smithsonian said, come to work. And so I became a chairman of the Repatriation Review Act. And I'll tell you what that means. Repatriation means to give back, right? Okay. During the 1830s, the government, the army, found themselves unable to repair their army when they were wounded, broken, and brought back into the medical tents, and they had no standard way of dealing with those different kinds of wounds. And at the same time, the eugenics laws was being passed and approved by Congress. Did you know that? Do you know what eugenics laws is? Eugenics laws is what Hitler operated on, white superiority. So Native Americans were categorized as archaeological resources and inhuman. And so who else better to practice on the Native Americans? During the 1800s, 30s to 1837, the practice came on. The Surgeon General issued an order for all field offices, all field medical tents, to gather Native American remains and send them to Washington for experiment. And that took place for about 7 years until the public got onto them and the law was rescinded. But during that time, they practiced medically on Native Americans. And when I got to Washington, there were 18,000 Native American human remains in possession of the Army. And the Army then transferred them to the Smithsonian under the Repatriation Act, which had just been enacted in 1990. And my job was to see that the office was doing their job. 18,000 human remains from all across the country. You don't read that in your history books. And so, this committee was to see that those tasks would be done in an orderly manner and done quickly and as accurately as possible. And so what he's saying is true. There's more to than just the treatment of Native Americans as they came across them in their progress west. That is the darkest part of government action that I know about. And so during my tenure there, which I was there 8 years, the maximum time, we returned something like 3,500 human remains. And these were remains that we knew about and had documents of where they were taken from, during which battles and what tribes. Otherwise, they don't have any clue of where they dug up the Native American remains because there's no documentation. So they remain. And so the task is, how do we go from there to complete the mission of repatriation? It will take years to do. And my 8 years there was just a pebble on the beach. And so it remains. I have had Native elders sit in front of me and cry and weep because the government is in possession of their sacred objects and they want it back. And by then, the government has figured out that they want to save and preserve those human remains, our sacred objects and funerary objects, for the future. It's always for the future, but they remain in their stock of cabinets. Very frustrating. So where's the future? They're locked up. And so when I left after 8 years, my exit speech, which I did, reminded them again of their main mission, the mission to return human remains and sacred objects, funeral objects, back to the Native Americans from where they came. But I could see the tide turning towards education of future by keeping those away from Native Americans. So it goes on, and I had to leave. And I agree with what you're saying, sir, back here. And that is the negative part of mine. So I returned back here, and while I was there, I went 100% into researching Native American history, especially the Utes and general Indians in general. And when I retired, I could no longer go back to my reservation because my wife had passed away long ago. So I retired into Colorado, where my people used to live. And that's why I'm here. To be amongst you, and I've been amongst you for 11 years, and you're still a challenge to me. I get reminded every once in a while, when I begin to feel comfortable that I'm a part of the society, I get reminded once in a while, very subtly, that I am Indian. I am different. And I have been reminded that several times. So I just stay on the watch, and I'm careful who I talk to, and I'm careful where I am, because there are still feelings out there, and I can feel it sometimes. I've had that all my life, you know, growing up through high school, prejudicial feelings, and college, and I had that in my profession. I was a civil engineer for the Bureau of Land Management, a fire manager, and then a realty officer for the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and then a leader of my tribe, and then the Smithsonian. So all through those years, I've had somewhat of a, some sort of confrontation sometimes, but I know what it is, and I know how to handle it. It's their problem, not mine. Yes. Her question was, what would I like to see the communities do in retrospect of what I'm talking about, and her deep feelings about and her emotional feelings about the connection with Native Americans and the earth and our environment. And that's really a tough question, or a good question, because it takes a community to accomplish things. And you people here are representatives of that. And however we can work together to bring about the consciousness of the environment in a Native American way. You heard John talk and drum about the ecology and the environment that we are in today. But that's what it takes, and it takes community strength, community awareness, and I would be right in the middle of it if you would give me a chance, and because I've expressed to you how I feel and how my people feel that you see here. And we would be very instrumental in doing that. And there are other places where they have a society of history or culture, things like this, but it has to be a community thing that people like you guys come forward here. In fact, at one time we had a gathering like this, and we all had a tablet, and we all wrote down names and addresses and contact numbers. And it's just as much as we want to give in our hearts of how far we want to go with it. And I'm ready and willing to help out. And I know that Alfred here and his family would be willing to help out and keep that alive for the kids, for the future.
Thank you so much, Roland, for mentioning that. There is an active group. We're not organized, but it's called the Roaring Fork Valley Circle. There's a paper over on the table. You can join the email list for the Roaring Fork Valley Circle. We've been holding full moon celebration since December 2009, when there was a gathering of the 11th Native Gathering of the Americas here, and the Nooch came to welcome people from North America, South America here. There's also a sheet over there that you can sign up to volunteer from Nooch Park, because we're going to be doing a project in conjunction with the town for that park, so it can be a welcoming place as people come down 133. So please, when you're over at the table, sign up for that list. And Roland has been most generous coming to give programs here in the community, and we aspire that something like this, now that Carbondale has declared Indigenous Peoples Day, that there will be more energy around this. So thank you so much for that good question, and thank you for showing up today. There is a donation basket in the center to appreciate what's been happening here today. So do contribute to that. There's some more food that's appearing on the table over here, but I think we need some more drumming and movement.
Okay, let's do a round dance. Let's get happy about this, and we're going to show you how to do that. I'm going to be in the middle, and we're going to form a circle here and do a round dance. Let's form a circle just right in this little area right here.